Okay, hello everybody, good evening. So tonight we're going to raise two questions as we always do, and as usual I'm going to ask that you tell me which one you would prefer to speak about. Yesterday I received a text from a friend of mine who has made Aliyah, lives in Israel, and he showed me an invite that he got to join a WhatsApp Tehillim group that they should daven for Donald Trump's re-election. And this was yesterday. The voting was on Tuesday. So he wanted to know, is it, leaving politics aside, let's say the it was a tefillah group for Joe Biden's election, regardless of who it's for, his shaila is this a tefillah that's even permitted to daven for one way or the other, considering that all the votes had to have been postmarked at the very least by election day. So that was shaila number one. But probably most of you had enough talking about elections and would rather talk about anything else other than the election. So shaila number two, another shaila that I got, what I thought was fascinating. Someone sent me the following email. Shalom Rav Leibowitz. My name is, I don't know if he wants me to say his name, I'm in Shir Gimel at KBY. I'm originally from Cape Town, South Africa. I have since made Aliyah and now live at the yeshiva. Without overcomplicating it, I need to explain a little bit of background behind the question. Along with every group of soldiers during wartime, there is a rabbi and other soldiers from the Rabbanut Tzva'it who are responsible to deal with all religious matters. This often includes kashrus, Shabbos, etc., but their primary role is to deal with the bodies of fallen soldiers, Rahman al-Islam, on the battlefield and under fire. This involves identification through edus, putting the body in a body bag, gathering body parts if needed, and sending them back for kvura. My job is to train these rabbis. While a lot of our training is done on realistic dolls, it is often impossible to bring them with us into the field, meaning that we have to use real living people. This means telling someone to play dead and having a rabbi deal with him in a series of actions which culminate with putting him in a body bag. This training is absolutely necessary for the rabbis to practice. I wanted to know if this is a violation of Al Tiftach Peh or something like that. Even with the assumption that it is allowed and even encouraged, it is often very awkward and uncomfortable for all parties. I was thinking of writing a short tefillah for the soldier being wrapped to say so he feels less uneasy. Something along the lines of, Ribono Shel Olam, you know that I'm only doing this to help the rabbi train so that if chas v'chalila he needs to do this for real, he'll be able to do this with maximum professionalism and kvod ha'meis. Yehi ratzon that if there was ever a gzeira against me that I should be in a body bag, may this be the carrying out of that gzeira, and my mesiris nefesh now in all my activities as a soldier in Tzahal be mechaper for any averos. It obviously needs some smoothing out, but I thought it might be good as a general idea. I've already spoken to some rabbis in the army itself about this, but I would greatly appreciate any feedback that you may have or help with penning the tefillah. As I say every day to my rabbis, may this all be lahalacha velo lema'aseh. So, shaila number one, can you daven for a particular result in the election now on Thursday night, 48 hours after the election? Shaila number two, is it permissible for people to play dead in order to train rabbis who lo aleinu, might one day have to deal with such things? So, please enter your votes in the chat. Okay. It's getting close here. It's exactly even right now. Oh, I was not expecting that. Yeah, is that the final vote? Is that everyone? I think that's everyone. No, it's not everyone, but it's almost everyone. Okay, so what do we have? 1, 2, 3. Yeah, it looks like shaila number one. Okay, I'm a little surprised, I have to say. All right, so we could talk about shaila number one, whether it's okay to die. I guess it's more lemaase for some people. You know, I've been getting a lot of questions actually about tefillah relating to the election. Like, should you be davening for a particular result? Meaning, if anyway we believe Yad Melachim Lev Melachim Biad Hashem, that as soon as a person is elected to public office, he loses his bechira chafshes anyway. It's all Biad Hashem to decide what's going to be and what decisions he's going to make anyway. So why would we even daven for a particular result? And I got a whole text earlier today with like detailed questions about particularly davening as it relates to emunah and bitachon and how to handle it when you don't get the result that you're interested in. I'll just to give some context to what's going on in people's minds, I'll read you the text I got. It says, "Are we even supposed to be upset if the outcome of the election is not what we wished? Once we do our shtadlus, there's nothing more for us to do. So whatever happens, are we supposed to say that's what Hashem wanted and it's out of our control? And with Lev Melachim, does it even make a difference who wins? Where do we strike the balance between our shtadlus, where we do vote, and even campaign, and bitachon after a different candidate was chosen? Should this reflect in my tefillah as well, that I should be davening for whoever Hashem wants, or am I supposed to daven for who I think is best? What if the winning candidate would be a chil shem shemayim? How do we approach them winning?" So these are the kinds of questions that are on people's minds as we deal with the aftermath of this election. But as far as a matter of halacha, is it okay to daven for a vote that was already taken? This is a fascinating sugya. I once gave a whole shiur about this, and I actually wrote it up in my first sefer about someone who had gone for sonogram, and the woman was told that that it was a good idea if she does a full genetic screening with she and her husband to just be get out ahead of any problems should there be any issues with the baby. And they did a full genetic screening. They had done some basic genetic screening before. They did a full genetic screening, and they found out that they're both carriers for a particularly terrible illness. So they went to get tested. They did an amniocentesis rather on the baby, on the fetus, to be able to determine whether the baby actually has this terrible illness, because after all, if both parents are carriers, there's a reasonable chance that the baby has the illness, and it was going to take several days until the results of that test were going to come back. So the fellow asked Shaila, during those days when they're waiting for the results of the test to come back, is it okay to daven that the baby is healthy, that the baby's not ill? So it's really a very similar Shaila over here, but there are certain critical differences, certain key differences between that Shaila and the Shaila about the election. The basic sugya is a Mishnah Masachas Brachos that relates to Sefer Bereishis actually. The Mishnah tells us that if a person cries about something that already was, so then it's a tefillah shav, it's a wasted tefillah to daven about what already happened. Someone just asked me in a question and answer session I did with Yeshivat HaKotel this week, are you allowed to wish that something never happened? That something that did happen, are you allowed to wish that it never happened? So one has to be careful. What does wish mean? To wish that never, is that a tefillah? That if I wish it never happened, or is it I feel that my life would have been easier had this not happened? You're allowed to feel that your life would be easier if it didn't happen, but if your wishing is a form of tefillah, that you're hoping to change the past, that's a tefillah shav, that a person is not allowed to do. So the word itself, the word wish, means different things to different people. I had a Talmud once who is still a close Talmud, a wonderful, wonderful guy, and one of his challenges in life is that he suffers with some pretty challenging OCD. Not OCD in the sense that he's washing his hands all the time, or even that he repeats Shemon Esrei 50 times, or anything like that. His OCD is in obsessing over thoughts that he has in his head. And he had the thought in his head once that someone had done something terrible to him, and he had the thought in his head that I wish that person would die. And the person died. Sometime later, the person died. And the person was not an old person. And he that triggered this terrible OCD, where anytime he has a negative thought about anything, he feels that it's a tefillah that should happen. And accompanying that OCD is anytime he has a negative thought or wishes something didn't happen, he feels that it's a tefillah shav, meaning he's associating a thought, a fleeting thought, with a tefillah that it should be, or a tefillah that something. Not every thought that goes through your head is necessarily a tefillah. People have thoughts that aren't necessarily tefillos. So to wish that something never happened, if it's a tefillah, that's a problem. If it's just, you know, I feel like that was a challenging part of my life, and it seems to me that life would have been easier had that not happened. Okay, you can make that assessment. You know, obviously, ultimately, kol David Rachmana L'tav David, but at soek l'shavar harezu tefillah shav. The person starts crying about the past in terms of hoping to change it, and the Mishnah gives examples. If a man's wife is pregnant and he says, let it be a male, let it be a baby boy, it's a tefillah shav. Baba derech, shama kol tzvacha b'yir, he's traveling and he hears some screaming in the city and he says, yiratzon shalotei b'toch beisi, that let that ruckus not be coming from my house, harezu tefillah shav. That's a tefillah shav as well. You can't daven for that which already was. Now the Gemara asks the obvious question. The Gemara in Brachas and Daf Samach says, well, wait a second. There is an example where someone did daven about the gender of a child, and it worked. It actually changed the gender of a child. What happened with Leah? That Leah did a quick mathematical cheshbon where she realized that if she has six of the Shvatim, and each of the Shvachos have two of the Shvatim, if she were to have a seventh, Rachel would be less than the Shvachos. And that would be terrible if Rachel is less than one of the Shvachos. So what she so while she was pregnant, she davened that it should be a girl, and miyad nevcha lebas, it turned into a girl. Vatikra shema Dina. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's Maisa Nisim. Or v'yibayisayma betoch arba'am yom hava. So whatever that means, Maisa Nisim, that it's a miracle, and therefore it could mean that because Leah was such a tzadekes, that she's zeichet to such Maisa Nisim, or it could just mean that this was a one-time thing, but we're not allowed to daven for such things. Maybe Leah was allowed to daven for such things, we're not allowed to daven for such things. Or b'toch arba'im yom ava, it was within arba'im yom, and the idea of within arba'im yom. If you can mute, if you're within arba'im yom, then the gender has not yet been determined within arba'im yom. Those are the two answers of the Gemara. But bottom line is the Gemara clearly assumes that you're not allowed to daven for something that already happened in the past, and we pask in this way in Shulchan Aruch. We pask in this way. I'm not able to mute everybody, so I don't know why. Oh, okay, taken care of. Now so we pass in this way in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch passes in Siman Reish Lamed Sif Aleph Hamispala Lamasha Avar Kon Shnichnas Yer V'Shama Kol Tzvach Abir, and he says Yiratzon Shloye Kol Ze B'Toch Beisi or Ishta Muberes. Says both examples Hareza Tzvila Shav. It's a Tzvila Shav. Ella Yispalel Adam Ala Asadavo V'Yitein Hoda Al Sha'avar. A person should daven for the future and give hoda'a for the past. So and Rabbi Kiviger writes in his commentary in the Shulchan Aruch that it doesn't just mean that it's a tefillah shav in the sense that it's a waste of your time and what are you wasting your time with? No, it's actually asur lispalel, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should go back and change what already happened. That would require a miracle, and a person is not allowed to daven for a miracle. Why is it that a person is not allowed to daven for a miracle? There are many different reasons suggestible for that. A person is not allowed to daven that Hashem should change nature, go back and change past events, which would require a miracle. A number of different suggestions. Some suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu prefers to use Derech HaTeva. When we're davening for a miracle, we're davening for Hashem to run the world in a way that He's not interested in running the world. Another possibility is that, yeah, miracles happen sometimes, but we lose out on zuchuyos. It costs us up in the bank account, up in Shemayim, when miracles happen for us. So it's not worthwhile to daven for a miracle. Others suggest it's the most overt and blatant act of gaiva that a person could possibly do, is daven for a miracle, to say, I deserve a miracle. Who do you think you are that you deserve a miracle? Miracles happen for Moshe Rabbeinu. Miracles don't happen for us, that a person is going to daven for such a thing. So whatever the reason is, you're not allowed to daven that Hashem should change things in the past. But here's where it gets tricky. There is another Gemara. A Gemara in Maseches Bav Metzia, Daf Mem Beis Amud Beis, where the Gemara tells us, and this is where elections come in. The Gemara tells us, Tan Rabbanan, Haholech Lamud Eskaranam. If a person is going to measure his silo, to count his grain, Omer, Yehi Ratzon Lufanecha Hashem Elokeinu Shetishlach Bracha B'Masa Yadeinu. He can daven that it should all be lebracha, that he should have a favorable count. His chilamud, once he's already begun to measure and to count, Amar Baruch HaShalech Bracha B'Kriyazeh, he can still daven, let it be lebracha. Madad, if the counting is over, the measuring is over, v'achar kach birech, harez a tefila shav. Only then does it become a tefila shav. Because ein bracha mitzuyah lo b'davar hashakov, lo b'davar hamadud, lo b'davar manui, bracha cannot be found in that which has been weighed, that which has been measured, that which has been counted, elo b'davar hasamim min ha'ayin, only on that which is hidden from sight. What you see from this Gemara is that it seems, at least, all of this, the grain was already in the silo. You just need to count it. You just need to measure it. But it's there already. It's all been, you know, the poll's closed. It's all there. It's just a matter of counting it. And yet, the Gemara says, you're still allowed to daven for it. It's only after you finish counting it that it's a tefillah shav. The problem is, why is this any different than a pregnant woman? That you're not allowed to daven about the gender of a child. It's there already. You don't know what's there yet. As long as you don't know what's there, it's somewhere min ayin. It's hidden from your eye. So if it's hidden and you don't know what's there, why is it that in that case we say, oh, you're not allowed to daven because that's davening for a tefillah shav. That's davening for that which is already determined. Yet when it comes to your garment, when it comes to your silo, you are allowed to daven for that, even though it's already been determined. It just hasn't been counted. That's the key question. How you answer that question is going to determine whether you can daven at this point for your candidate to win, making no assumptions about who your candidate is, but for your candidate to win. So, I've often remarked, when I first thought of this question, when I first came across this question, I thought that this is such an obvious question. Probably the Gemara itself asks this question. And I looked through the sugyas and I couldn't find it. The Gemara didn't ask this question. Then I thought, you know what? Maybe the Rishonim asked this question. I looked through all the Rishonim. I couldn't find. Maybe the classic Achronim, the Pnei Shua, the Chasam Sofer. I don't know. Maybe some of the classic Achronim on Shas asked this question. Couldn't find it. The only people I found that actually relate to this question are like contemporary Gedolim, like Rav Chaim Kanievsky, like Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. I couldn't believe it. Like, I didn't understand why. And it must be that there's an obvious answer, right? It can't be that all of this was lost on all of these generations of Gedolei Torah. There must be an obvious answer. I remember I was talking to Rabbi Reuven Tarragon when I was struggling with this sugya. He was visiting DRS. I was Rebbe in DRS at the time, and he was coming to do interviews for Reuven Tarragon. I said Reuven Tarragon, that's why I said Yeshiva HaKotel. With Rabbi Moshe Tarragon, I was talking from Gush, and he was visiting DRS at the time, and I was talking to Rabbi Moshe Tarragon, and I asked him this question, and he said, after a while, he said, I feel like up in Shemayim, they're laughing at us. He said, I don't know what the answer is, but I know in Shemayim, they're laughing at us because there's something very obvious here that we're missing. Like, it can't be that, like, all of the Rishonim just missed, you know, didn't think of this question. Like, he said, my bet is if there was a farmer here, he would be laughing at us. Like, you don't know what a goren is. Like, you don't know what it means to measure and to count. Like, we're probably missing something obvious. Okay, but what? what are we missing? So I asked around a little bit, and I got a few interesting answers. I asked it because I was asking about the shaila about the testing for Tay-Sachs. So one answer I got is that some suggested that there's a chilik between ribui and shinui, that ribui haba min amiut is not such a nes. This was the answer that was given by the author of the Sefer, the multi-volume Sefer, Chavtzelos HaSharon, who's a big London. So he writes, and he sent me this answer, he sent this to my friend Rav Shai Shechter, who forwarded it to me, that he says, Bracha hi inyan kayim b'habriya. Hariboy sheyera min amiyot zu lo hanhaga nisit muchletes. This is not an absolute miracle. The concept of bracha, the concept of something becoming, is not a miracle. When you have something that's a yesh me'ayin, that's out of nowhere, that's a miracle. So you're allowed to daven for that which is somewhere min ayin, as long as all you're davening for is bracha. But for a gender change, zachar to nekeva, nekeva to zachar, that's absolute nes. That you're not allowed to daven for. So that was his suggestion. I'm not sure that I understand that suggestion. Meaning, if you're davening that the bracha is that you should have more grain, and there really is only X amount of grain, why is that more of a, why is that less of a nes than changing male to female? Rav Zilberstein, when I sent him the shaila, Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein sent back to me, Hagoran sheyisraba enu nes galoy kol kach. He says, you know, things happen to peros. Maybe the goren is not measured by the count of the grain, but by the volume of the grain. And maybe the grain will swell a little bit. Maybe the atmospheric conditions will cause less of the grain to spoil. There's a way for bracha to happen in grain and for the volume to become greater. That's not actually a miracle. So that I get a little bit more, right? That there are things that can happen to the grain that will cause the grain to be more valuable, that, and maybe even larger, as opposed to changing the gender of a child, which certainly is an absolute miracle. So that was how Rav Zilberstein suggested. In fact, Rav Zilberstein then went a step further and said, and therefore, if a baby may have a genetic illness and you've already gone through the testing, he said he thinks you may daven for that. Because anything that's at all refuah related, you're allowed to daven for. Anything that's, we have so little understanding of the human body, and people have miraculous recoveries all the time. Is it really a miracle when people have miraculous recoveries all the time? Or is it that we just don't really get it? We don't really understand the fully yet. We're working on it, and we you know, it's like our understanding of COVID. It's we understand something, but very, very little. It takes a lot of time to learn. So we understand very little about the human body. So for illness, he thought that you can count. Now, if that's the answer, are you allowed to daven for the votes that the president or the former vice president should win the election? So I thought pashtus is yes, because we've seen elections where hanging chads made the difference, where it lost ballots or found ballots might make the difference. Meaning, it's not only about what Zilberstein is saying is that when there's a more complex situation, it's not like a yes or a no, but there's more complexity to the picture. There are more factors that could determine how this happens, how this plays out. Lawsuits may determine how this plays out. Although my sense is that those lawsuits never work, but lawsuits may determine how this all plays out. There are so many different factors that could determine how it plays out that it's not just that the numbers should turn out a certain way. Maybe it's that the numbers should be counted a certain way. So if that's the approach you're going to take, l'chora, you're still allowed to you can still daven for it. Another possible way to be miyashiv the sugyas is that maybe it really depends on whether it's something worthwhile davening for. Maybe when it comes to davening that a gender of a child should change, that's not a worthwhile thing to daven for. Kodesh Baruch Hu gives you a gift of a healthy child, you say thank you very much, right? That's not a worthwhile thing to daven that it should be this way or that way. It's not an appropriate thing. Just got a shayla last week. Someone is going through the process of fertility treatments, and they're doing they want to know if they should do gender selection because. They know they're only going to have X number of children, so to be Mekayim Mitzvah Puravu, should they select? They have one daughter, should they select that it be a boy? Or I don't remember, maybe that one boy, should they select that it be a girl, so that they can fulfill the Mitzvah Puravu? Generally speaking, I think the answer is no. Now we don't, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing to give his bracha, Rav Shechter told us that when people come to him and ask shailas about family planning and about delaying having children, so the first thing he tells them is, The rule usually is, if Hashem wants to give you a matana, Hashem wants to give you a bracha, you say thank you. You don't say, come back later. Let's talk again in the future. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give you something, you say thank you. Now, there may be times that there's reason to say, no thank you, because this may not be a bracha for me at this point in my life, or this may not be a bracha because it may be unhealthy or whatever. There may be situations like that, but the default position is certainly, Hashem wants to give you a bracha, you say thank you. Is it appropriate to daven that you have a successful year in Parnassa? Yeah, we daven for Parnassa all the time. You want to daven for the Goren? Gesunte, daven for the Goren. But to daven the gender of a child, maybe that's not appropriate. The only problem is, it doesn't seem that that's the case, because when Leah was davening, it doesn't seem that answer holds any water. Because when Leah was davening, was she davening inappropriately? Adraba, she davened that the baby should be a girl to save her sister the embarrassment. That says she was doing it to for the dignity of her sister, who, by the way, she owed one to. Her sister was very careful about her dignity. So you can call that inappropriate. So I don't think that approach would work over here, or would work at all to answer these sukkahs. Then there's a more simple answer to the stira between the sukkahs. That it could be the Gemara Bat Metzia never said you can daven for more in the Goren, and this is similar to the first answer, I guess, but the Gemara said you could daven for bracha in the Goren. And bracha can come in many different ways. Bracha can come by the grain ripening at a certain stage, by the market prices changing, or the particular grain that you sell being more valuable in the market. Once you've already counted it, you're not even allowed to daven for that, because that's a separate inyan. Not because it's a tefillah shav in the classical sense. You see, when the Gemara Bava Metzia said it's a tefillah shav, the Gemara didn't just say tefillah shav. The Gemara says it's a tefillah shav once you've already counted it, because ein a bracha shora ela al davar asamay min ayin, lo b'davar amani v'lo b'davar ashakav v'lo b'davar, meaning that there are two types of tefillah shav. There's tefillah shav where it's over, it's already done, and there's tefillah shav where it's already been, where it's not over, and things could still change. But since you already know what you have as you have it, it's already it would require something unusual, meaning it's something public, it's something known. And when something is known, ayin hara is sholet. So anytime you're battling that which is already known, that which is already quantified, so you're not going to be able to overcome the ayin hara. So that's what the Gemara seems to be saying. In either case, in any event, whichever way you want to say it, l'chora, in this situation, it's a dynamic enough situation that it may not be an isser of tefillah shav to daven for such a thing. I would just point out that I think at this point, and probably even beforehand, our tefillos are probably best not reserved for a particular candidate, but that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect Klal Yisrael, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should protect good and righteous people wherever they may be, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should see to it that this turns out for the best, whatever his master plan is. You know, there is a comment of the Vilna Gaon, I've been quoting a lot lately, there's a comment that the Vilna Gaon has on the Bracha and Shmona Esrei, where we refer to Hashem as a Melech Ozer Umoshia Umagin. Why three different words to you to describe how Hashem helps us out? So the Vilna Gaon comments, Ozer means that sometimes I put in my ishtadlus, I put in my effort, and Hashem helps along that effort. I go to work to try to make a living. I'm still here, I'm still in the office. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps out that effort, that when I try to make a living, that I should get paid for it. But he's helping out the same effort that I'm trying for. Sometimes we have Moshia, that sometimes I have no control whatsoever over anything. It's totally b'yad Hashem. It's totally b'yad Hashem. Like I'm awaiting, a diagnosis. I took a blood test and I'm waiting the results of the test. I took a COVID test, I'm waiting the results of the test. Not up to me at all. I know I have no control over it. Moshia. Then, says the Vilna Gaon, sometimes I think I know what's right. And I'm going to do, based on my best judgment, what I think is right. But what I think is right and what I think is best for me may in fact be the very worst thing for me. I just don't have the view that Hashem has. I don't see things as broadly as Hashem does. And in those cases, I daven that Hashem should be a mugging, that Hashem should protect, that He should protect me from who? From myself, from my own judgment, from my own flawed human judgment. And I think like at this point, we did our ishtadlus, we do our research, we try to get an understanding of the issues, we vote our conscience, we vote what we think is best. But in the end of the day, on something of this magnitude especially, none of us really know. None of us know if we want Hashem to be an ozer or if we need him to be a magen in this situation. So to daven, it's always good to daven. But ultimately, I think the tefillah at this point, and probably throughout the entire thing, the tefillah should be not that I want my guy to win, but rather the tefillah should be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should continue to protect Klal Yisrael and to make things good for Am Yisrael, both in the United States and, of course, in Eretz Yisrael and the world over. And we daven for Yeshua and for Geula be'ezras Hashem. Have a good night, everybody, and a wonderful Shabbos.
Rabbi?
Yeah?
Can I ask a quick shiloh?
Sure.
Thanks. I may have missed this, but the Gemara...
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe or Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret? With Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whatever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/try to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/try.